right, we're back with a bonus track with the legendary veteran comic entertainer Tom Dreesen. So many great stories, so many great appearances, TV, film, et cetera, and of course live with Frank and a whole host of other major stars. But Tom, those books before, I wanted, you know, they had such an impact on you. I wanted to make sure we documented everything correctly. So you mentioned, you know, those books earlier before that.
Elmer Douglas.
Yeah. Right?
You want the books that changed my life. Again, I came from a negative background. Both parents were alcoholic. Mm-hmm. The eight kids lived in a shack. Shining shoes, setting pins in bowling alleys, caddying, selling newspapers. Everybody in my neighborhood were drinkers. They went to the bars. Mm-hmm. And so I came from a negative background. And at some point in my life, I didn't want to return to that. I wanted to get away. I was a high school dropout. You know, I went in the military when I was 17 years old. I went in the Navy and served in a Marine Corps unit for 9 months as well. But anyhow, I began to read every positive mental attitude book I could find, from Norman Vincent Peale, The Power of Positive Thinking, to A Guide to Confident Living, Maxwell Maltz, Psycho-Cybernetics, W. Clement Stone, Positive Mental Attitude, Dale Carnegie, Think and Grow Rich, Claude Bristol, The Magic of Believing. Yeah. But the book that really changed a lot of my life was The Power of Your Subconscious Mind by Joseph Murphy. Mm. And so I read all these books, and I began to put these principles in place so that I could become a success. I didn't want to be a failure. I had all the excuses for being a failure. I could have said, gee, both my parents are alcoholic. I grew up poor. And so if I ended up in prison, it wasn't my fault. It wasn't my fault. You see, I'm a victim. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't a victim. I was a victor. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to let the world know that I could become something too, you know.
Yeah.
Let me digress for a moment. What golf did for my life, when I went to, before I ever caddied, I dreamed that one day maybe I'd own a bar, own a tavern, because my dad spent all of his money in bars, and I thought the richest people in the world were bartenders or owners of bars. When I went to, and so that was as far as I couldn't think past my environment. Mm. I understand today when a young kid in the ghetto says, I want to grow up to become a pimp or a drug pusher, he's never seen a more successful man in his environment. He sees them with diamond rings and hundreds of dollar bills in their pockets and new cars, so he can't see past his environment. When I went to caddy as a boy, I caddied at an all-Jewish country club on the south side of Chicago called Ravislow, and the members were Mr. Florsheim, Mr. Mayling, people, very successful.
Wow.
People. And I caddied there, and they treated me like a son, not like a slave or a servant.
Mm-hmm.
And every year the caddies went to a banquet, and two caddies went to college on the Evans Scholarship. All of a sudden, being in an environment for a couple of years, I thought maybe I could be more than just a tavern owner or a bartender. Mm-hmm. I started thinking out of my environment. And that's when I started reading all these books when I went into service, that I didn't want to return to becoming a drunk in a bar and working in a steel mill. Not that that was bad, but just living my life that way. Yeah. I wanted to be better and to be all I could be in my lifetime.
Well, a good life lesson is also you're joining the JCs, and there's a lot of other service groups out there, Rotary and Lion and Elks and all these other clubs. But folks should realize that, you know, if they get into a group where there's good people doing good things, then probably some good's going to happen to you, right?
Well, I mean, it's biblical in nature. Cast your bread. What you sow, you shall reap. You know, the more you put out, the more that comes back to you. You know, I truly believe in that. You know?
Yeah.
You know, the one thing that I teach young, I teach at high schools. I go and I give motivation speeches to high schools for free, but at colleges, at universities, and corporate America hires me too. But whenever I talk to young college students, I tell them there's an element in our society that's doing all it can to make victims out of you. You are all victims. It isn't your fault. Nothing is your fault. Any failure you have in life is not your fault. See, you're a victim of this system.
Mm-hmm.
And what I tell them is, I said, look, how many of you ever said to your parents or even thought it, I didn't ask to be here? Have you ever thought that? Raise your hand, and they'll raise their hands. I'll say, have you ever even said to your parents, look, I didn't ask to be here? I said, I don't want to give you a biology lesson, but when the male and the female make love, from the male comes 5 million seeds. Did you know that? 2.5 million die instantly. The other millions die along the way. And soon, there's only 100,000 seeds left. Then there's 50,000. Then there's 100 seeds left. There's 10 seeds left. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you. And I point at them. I say, you. Don't ever tell me you didn't ask to be here. Bull. You fought to be here.
That's right.
You're a winner. You were born a winner. I said, applaud yourselves. I'm in a room full of winners, you know. And then I said, you were born a winner. You're not a victim. You're a victor. And don't let anybody ever tell you you're a victim.
Yeah.
I saw a guy with no arms and no legs giving motivation speeches. He's been the most amazing person I've ever seen in my life. I can't recall his name.
Yeah, Richard, but, we know the guy.
We know who you mean.
Yeah.
Well, and should he cried out, why me, God? Should he cried out and said, I'm a victim? He said, no, I'm a victor. And now he motivates other people to go on and be all they can be. You know, remember this, that people, the people who want you to succeed, you know, are the good people in life. You know, successful people, great people, believe that you too can become great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you too, and they will do everything to help you reach your goals, you know.
Yeah, I think you're talking about Nick Vujicic. I think that's the one guy who's a motivational speaker with no arms and no legs.
Amazing. You know?
Yeah.
You know, I when I'm growing up in this shack that I grew up in, my older brother Glenn would take me out and teach me how to shine shoes and teach me how to sell newspapers and all that stuff. But it was a lesson I learned that I have a sign on my desk right now. It's called, if it is to be, it's up to me.
Mm.
You know, did I know that I could? I knew I couldn't go to college on an athletic scholarship, and I knew I couldn't go to college on an academic scholarship, but I could go to college.
Mm.
You know, today everybody says, oh, I'm entitled. Oh, I'm entitled. Just because I live here, you must educate me. And I say, that's horse feathers. You know, you can go to college, but you might have to work your way through college. When was the last time you heard that? You know, Tim Reed worked as a waiter. My friend Tim Reed, he graduated from Norfolk State College. He worked as a waiter so that he could go to college. You know, it's all there for you, but you got to work for it.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in a neighborhood that the mantra was simple, this simple. You only deserve in life what you work for.
Yeah, you reap what you sow, absolutely.
So, Tom, I'm curious, did you take up golf when you were caddying, or did you take up later
yes.
in life? When you're okay.
Well, you know, when you're caddying, we played on Mondays. The caddies got to play. Now, I went into service and never played for 4 years. When
okay.
I came out of service, I got a wife and kids. I never played. I mean, the guys would say, I was working construction. The guys would say, you want to play golf this weekend? I say, yeah. Okay, we're getting up Sunday morning at 5 in the morning so we can have the first tee time. I had worked all week. So what happened was when I started touring with Sammy Davis Jr. as his opening act, he had a tournament up in Hartford, Connecticut, the Sammy Davis Jr. Pro-Am, and Ping sponsored his tournament. So he bought me a set of Ping woods and irons one time.
Okay.
And I got back in the game, and Bob Hope invited me to the Bob Hope Classic in 1977. And I went out to that first tee, and there's like 8,000 people out there, and the announcer goes, ladies and gentlemen, on the tee, Mr. Tom Dreesen, and both my knees started to shake. So I said, I got to start working on my game, and I began working on my game.
Yeah.
In 2005, now this is a brag, forgive me, but 2005 Golf Digest ranked me the third best celebrity golfer in the country.
Wow.
And who?
But that was 15,
who
are, that was 10 years ago.
Yeah, so who are some others in that top 10 list there?
Jack Wagner is by far, in my opinion, the greatest celebrity golfer that ever lived.
Okay.
And Bing Crosby was a great golfer. Dean, a lot of guys were good golfers, Dean Martin. But Jack Wagner has won in competitions. We were on a tour many years ago called the Celebrity Players Tour. And there's many athlete golfers that are better. Rick Roden won over $2 million.
Oh, yeah, the old
tour.
Baseball pitcher, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Baseball pitcher, yeah. But Jack Wagner, celebrity golfer, is by far the best. No one can, you know, he's really a good golfer.
Yeah.
So what do you do to stay fit besides play golf?
You work out every
I work out every day. Yeah. I just worked out before you guys,
okay.
You know, before I talked to you guys. But I work out. I ran three marathons, you know, for multiple sclerosis. My sister Darlene had MS,
mm-hmm.
so I created something called 26 Miles for Darlene.
Mm.
And I would run, and people would pledge money for every mile I run. And celebrities would come in and run with me. All my celebrity friends would come in. And Smokey Robinson's the only one who ran all 26 miles.
Oh, wow.
Most of them would run a block or two blocks
right.
or a mile. But so I've always been a runner, but I quit running about a year ago, and now because of all the pounding on the joints, you know.
Yeah.
So now I walk briskly for about 4 miles every day, and then I go in the gym and I do certain, you know, exercises and stretches, and I try to eat properly. But I got a sweet tooth. But
are you in touch with Dick Van Dyke at all? Because he's 90 and he still works out every morning too. So he's over there in Malibu.
Yeah, I see him at the Frank Sinatra tournament sometimes.
Yeah, that's
you know he's an Illinois boy. You know he's from Danville.
Yeah. Well, I saw, you know, the year I went out there, and I'm, you know, he left after I had given that video of Richard Burton, you know, to the people running it, and as he was leaving, he was at the table over. He just leaned over and said to me, you know, good night to me, and I go, my gosh, you didn't have to do that. I mean, classy guy, and of course, Mrs. S came over, and after she had given away a car, some of those prizes in that, and I've been to a lot of black tie things, and boy, some of the packages they put together. You know, you go to stay a chateau in Europe and stay with a chef, and right, and some, I mean, just unbelievable, some of the stuff they put together. And of course, they fly in the act from Vegas on the other night, and it's a special night. But anyway, you know, everyone's having a blast there, and they're just, I met some really cool people, Dick Butkus, Yogi Berra, I mean, on and on and on. I turn around.
This is our 28th year. You got to remember that, I mean, the people, if I read off a list of all those who have passed away since starting, including Frank, I mean, it's like who's who in show business.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Elke Sommer, I bumped into her.
She still goes to it, yeah. And every year she says, whatever happened to Joe Vecchio? I said, Elke.
Well, you know, my good friend is Bill Marks. I don't know if you're in touch with him much. He's Harpo's son out there, and of course, his...
Oh, wonderful guy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's a great pianist, too, by the way.
Yes, and actually, he was our first show guest of the year.
Guest. Yeah. Good thing his dad couldn't be on the show, because that would have been a weird show. But
yeah. Harpo could talk, but he just wouldn't do it on radio.
Not on radio, he couldn't. So.
Yeah, anyway. The Marx Brothers, you know, the young kids listening to the show would have no idea what you're talking about, but Groucho Marx is one of the funniest people on the planet. Everybody, you know, his favorite line about a country club, they wanted to make him a member of a country club. Yeah. He said, I refuse to become a member that would have the likes of me, a member of a club that would have the likes of me as a member.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. So I think he said with the Democratic Party, too, so...
Yeah.
Maybe we ought to just finish up with, you know, this is a presidential election year. I mean, is this the most crazy? I mean,
I find the Republican debates to be great comedy.
Isn't that
personally?
The whole thing I have never seen candidates like this in my life. I mean, you know, that this is what we've come to, that on one side of the thing you've got a person that's possibly going to become indicted and is under criminal investigation. The other side, you got a narcissistic egomaniac. I mean, is this the best we have to offer?
Really
whatever happened?
It's become a circus. I mean, well, you know, these debates, and I keep saying it, I mean, look, they could have a strict enforcement rule where once they could turn the other mics off. We're going to have one speaker at a time address one, and we're going to go, we only turn your mic on, you know, when we talk to you and have a formal debate. You know, you argue an issue. But I guess when they're like, I don't know how many were up there, 10, 12 people, I guess it's hard to do that. So they let them. But it's become it's not a debate. It's a free for all. And it's really kind of it's just kind of disconcerting.
And I blame the moderator. Joe, here's the question.
Yeah.
If I was Kasich, I would be infuriated. If I was him, I'd go on the TV and be infuriated. I'd say, here's what you guys do, the moderator.
Yeah.
Now, Mr. Trump, Senator Rubio said the other day, well, the moment he mentions his name, he gets a rebut.
Yeah.
Said the other day that you're a jerk, so Trump says, well, he's a little jerk, and he's a... And so he said, well, he mentioned my name, I get to talk. They said, well, Senator Rubio, you know, Senator Cruz said about you, and, well, now he could mention my name, I get this talk. Meanwhile, Kasich is standing in the back over there, nobody mentions his name.
Right.
Carson had a great line the other night, and he said, well, somebody please attack me so I
can get exactly. Why don't they just go left to right, right to left? Look, let's talk about climate change. Start to the left, you got 2 minutes, go. And then just go right down the line or whatever.
No, but
issue.
What they do is they attack each other, giving the other person 30 seconds to rebut.
Yeah,
and the moderators love it because it looked to me like a high school Friars Club roast. That's what it looked like.
Only worse.
only worse. Yeah. I mean, and yet the whole country, I travel the nation. I talk to cab drivers, I talk to beauticians, I talk to guys who sell newspapers at the stand, and I ask them their personal feelings. If the media knew how angry as they are at the establishment in Washington, D.C., they're that angry at the media as well.
Yeah.
That's what's happening here. You got these populists. I mean, Trump's whole thing is all these people that are angry at the media and angry at Washington, D.C. for never getting anything done. you know.
Well,
and,
don't you?
And yeah, I the think rich keep getting richer, you know.
Here's what I think happened. It was a sad day when NBC, CBS, and ABC got bought up by larger conglomerates, because when they were just media companies fighting head to head, you know, trying to do the get the best, you know, the big story, get it first, get it right, and actually pay their news bureaus, you know, something. You know, CBS used to have dozens of news bureaus all over the world. I heard Roger Mudd speak here a few years ago. He said, we're down to two news bureaus, I think London and Baghdad at the time. That's it. So it's, you know, the glory days of Walter Cronkite, they're pretty much gone. It's sad.
Well, here's what's gone. When they, years ago, the news didn't get ratings. You didn't rate the news.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have ratings.
Yeah, it was a loss leader.
News.
It was a loss leader, yeah.
Yeah. And once they got ratings, all of a sudden, all the stations became like the National Enquirer. You know, they all start doing National Enquirer type reporting, you know.
Yeah. But anyway, raise
Tom,
up the
Tom, really
music.
Appreciate it.
Tom, that's it. We really loved having you on, and hopefully we'll get you down here for some sort of event real soon. So, Tom, much appreciated. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Joey. Thank you, Richard. Talk
all right.
to you guys soon.
All
Take
right.
care.
Take care now. Bye-bye now. All right, folks. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.